Security, and I will call the Board of Directors meeting for Travis Central Appraisal District to order. We are on the second floor here at 8314 Cross Park Drive. The time is 11:30, and a quorum is present. The first item on our agenda is citizens' communication. This is an opportunity for the public to address the board on a subject within the board's jurisdiction that is not listed as a separate item on the board's meeting agenda to be eligible to speak to the board. The first person I have is Mark Austin.
Good morning, Mark Austin, Property Tax Group. We would just like to raise with the board if there could be clarification today on how the district plans to schedule informal hearings with tax agents. Will there be, number one, will there be an agent meeting before the season starts, and if so, when approximately? And secondly, will the district be coordinating set times and days to work through the volume of protests that we'll have? Or will we be treated as individual property owners who need to show up on a will call basis and try to get work done?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Stephen Neal.
I've been here before, and my area that I'm interested in is the informal hearings. And basically, I'm here because my understanding is the informal hearings were brought back, but I'm not really sure I understand the nature of the informal hearings now. Before, they were actually a decision-making process where a decision was made. It sounds like, from what I'm hearing, that now an informal hearing is we'll bring somebody in and let them talk about it, and then when they leave, we'll send it to a manager or somebody, and that person will make the decision. That is not a solution. And I was here for the last meeting, or one of the meetings, where they were talking about what their solution was going to be. And to my mind, the solution actually has to solve the problem, and it doesn't just solve a problem. The problem was that you did away with the citizens' ability to come in and protest their taxes and to get some resolution. Now all of it is, from what I'm understanding, it's couched in terms of a meeting where information is given to the taxpayer. The other thing that I'm disturbed about is what I'm seeing is a pattern here, and I don't really understand it. The informal hearings, as I said last time, it just looked like somebody got sued and they said, oh, we'll just get rid of the informal hearings. We'll show them. Now we've got another issue that has to do with the appraisals and the MLS issue and some lawsuit. And again, I'm seeing somebody just say, oh, I don't like the fact that I've been sued. I'll just get rid of the appraisal thing. I'm just going to do it. I'm seeing what, from my perspective, is not, let's just say, I would prefer less petulance and more intelligence and decision-making and the processes and policies that you're going to do. There just seems to be an overriding issue of I don't like being told that I can't do it this way. Rather than going in and trying to get a solution, it's just the solution is just tossing your grenade at the problem and saying let's just blow it up. So I don't really feel comfortable with the way that that's the pattern that I'm seeing. Rather than, let's just say, solutions are us, I'm seeing disruption are us, or possibly even back with the informal thing. When I came in the first time, I had issues about the amount of information that was being given out to the public. Here again, fortunately, I've seen some articles in the Statesman, and so they are addressing some of the issues that are here and trying to find out what's going on, but I still have some issues with just how much deception or lack of information is being given to the public. So that's where I am on it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is John Borge.
Hi, Board. My name is Johan Borge. First time here, so I don't know exactly what to expect out of you guys, but I was hearing this gentleman saying you guys can come up here and complain, so I've tried to not do that. Just want to give you a little background of what exactly I'm here for. And really, it is kind of a complaint. in general, I represent a nonprofit called Euroway, and we applied for a tax exemption. We got declined several things. But the thing is this, I'm trying to battle the appraisal district of the decision, and I requested for them to give me a copy of the recording that we did, because at that point they told me this is what you need to do, and that was just to build a volleyball court. We did do that. They denied it again. I asked for the recording. They said that the recording was going to give it to me. They provided a recording that was not really there. Then they told me the actual tape recording was corrupted. To me, that seems like that falls into you guys, because you guys who manage the recording, how much money goes to funding to the equipment you guys have. And was this just that one incident that just happened to our case where the recording is corrupted, or does it happen all the time? You know, I would like to know exactly how you guys follow up with citizens on when they try to protest on the actual issues that they have when they were told to do something. So I would like to know from you guys what exactly you guys can do on that prospect, because all this is getting recorded and it goes to a database, and who manages that database? Who records that information? Do you have backups? Because there's no way that you can lose that information in your system. So I know you guys are talking about the phones later on, but I would like to know who manages your database, because it's impossible that you guys could lose that kind of data information of the recording of the hearing when you can use that against their appraisal because you were told to do one thing. That's all. Thank you.
The next speaker is Susan Spataro.
This is the first time I've been here, and at first I want to start off by saying thank you very much for your service. It's tough to be on a board like this, and what you do is incredibly important. By way of background, I'm a retired CPA, CMA, and I have an MBA, but more importantly, for 24 years I was the Travis County Auditor, so I sort of sat on that part where we were getting it. People are so unhappy now over everything. They're losing homes, businesses are leaving. And, I mean, it's a sad state of affairs. This is not your fault, but it's happening today. So I guess my message, which I hope you will look at, because I was in a very similar situation as this independent agency, it is so critical that TCAD follows state law and follows professional standards and is independent. The whole agency has to be that way, and you have to support that. It is a disservice to anyone when you don't do that. And it's hard because everyone's got their own interests. You know, they don't want to pay taxes. TCAD doesn't assess taxes. So I guess what I would just like to tell you is hang tough, guys. You know, follow professional standards, follow the law, respect independence, because it is a critical part. The legislature deliberately took away the appraisal from the taxing jurisdiction. So they should not be influencing you. They should not. It's a separate, independent process, and it's tough, and you're going to make some mistakes. I made some mistakes, but please be independent, follow the law. And by the way, if I can help any of you or talk to you about anything, please just feel free to give me a call. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next speaker is Thomas Leonard, but did you want to speak before the item 5A, or would you like to speak now? At your leisure.
Thank you, and I'd like to echo the previous speakers. Thank you for your service. I was on some elected boards and appointed boards, and I know it's not always fun. I'm here. I'm Tom Leonard. I'm the superintendent of Westlake Eanes ISD, and I represent here today the superintendents of Dripping Springs, Elgin, Lake Travis, Leander, Marble Falls, Pflugerville, and Round Rock. We're also in communication with Austin ISD as well. We represent thousands of teachers and tens of thousands of kids. And I will not, we have a letter for you, which we have emailed, but I won't read it. You can read it whenever you like. I'll just give you a couple of points to it, if that's okay. First, it's important to have accurate assessments, and basing the assessments on last year's data would be basing the assessments on wrong data for 2020, for this year, which would mean the assessments that you're going to pass on to the taxpayers are going to be inaccurate. And that's not good for the taxpayers or the governmental units that are going to be involved in this process. The implications for us are the following. First, under HB 3, our tax rates would be compressed. Under our estimate right now, they would have been, all the ISDs, the tax rate for all taxpayers would have been compressed about 5 cents. If we base it on last year's values in terms of the assessments and freeze it, it'll only go down 1 cent. So that means each taxpayer will not get the compressed rate, which is supposed to dampen the effect on the assessed evaluations that are going on each year in the county. Second, it'll affect the amount of money we collect for our INS debt service, which means if we cannot collect as much money as we normally would collect, we can't pay off debt faster, which saves taxpayers money. In our districts, ones on this list, that's somewhere between $10,000 and $10 million that we will not collect. Next, any district that's connected under HB 3 with transition funds will not get those funds. That will hurt their budgets. Finally, ISDs that are in split counties, Travis and another county as well, which there are multiple, are going to have great difficulties if you are basing this on last year's data. Finally, it affects some of our districts more than others. It affects the M&O money that we get. In my case, 85% of that budget is for people. That means staff, and it means salaries and benefits. In the next couple weeks, by law, I have to decide who I am letting go, and in the month or two after that, I have to decide what kind of compensation they're going to get. If this is based on inaccurate data, I'll be making those decisions based on inaccurate data. Some options that we came up with, not great. One, we'd love ABOR to come to an agreement with you at least for 1 year. I'm sorry. Well, our solutions are listed in your, some solutions are listed. Thank you so much.
On to the next item, item number four, the consent agenda. These items may be acted upon by one motion. No separate discussion or vote on any of the items will be had unless requested by a board member. I'll give the board some time to review those documents and then have a motion. Seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We'll now take up item number 5A of our regular agenda, discussion and possible action on Chief Appraiser's report to include the 2020 evaluation efforts, 2020 informal meetings preparation, Lake Austin Properties taxpayer outreach programs, 2019 annual report, 2019 MAPS final report, 850 EAL renovation status.
Did you want to take public comment?
I let Mr. Leonard
come back
speak
up and also extend his comments.
Oh yeah, absolutely, Mr. Leonard. Would you like to extend your comments on the item?
Oh, I will come back.
Yeah.
Well, so first, we really want accurate assessments. We really do. It's good for everyone. One idea would be, hopefully, maybe ABOR would agree for 1 year to share the MSL data with you. You get what you need. We get this done, and we figure this out together. We didn't realize this was going on until about a week ago. So that's the first time we got any information. Second, we need a contingency plan. If we can't get MSL data, we have to have another way of doing it. We can't just say we're going to go with this same amount of the last year's evaluations forever. That's just not going to work. We need a contingency plan. We should have been thinking about that for a while. But let's come up with a contingency plan to get accurate assessments. Third, if the comptroller has any information that can help us, let's get it. If we can get any information from them that can help us get accurate assessments, we're all with you. What we fear is the fourth. We are going to have businesses that are going to get hurt from this significantly. There is going to be some damages to businesses and communities, and I am afraid, and the superintendents are afraid, that we're going to wind up in litigation beyond the litigation we're ready in, which could have a chilling effect on all the assessments that are going out. So I really don't want that to happen. None of us want that to happen. Right. and I wish you all the luck possible in trying to solve this problem. I'm not here for me. I got a lot of kids and teachers I got to take care of. Thank you.
Thank you.
So into the Chief Appraiser's report, and the very first topic on the report is 2020 valuation efforts. As Mr. Leonard has already stated, we had a meeting with our ISDs to make them aware of issues that the appraisal district has been dealing with in terms of market data and a market data deficiency. We have had some issues in the past that were very public with a restriction on data and the way that we acquire data. We have made due diligent efforts to try to acquire data from a multitude of other sources. This is something that we talked to the CFOs of the school districts about last week. You know, we have looked at doing researching deed records to see if there's anything in that. It's very limited data in the deed transactions. It's generally $10 and other valuable consideration. The actual purchase price is not included into the deed information. If there's vendor lien information available, it's really hard to discern what the actual sales price amount, because the down payment could range anywhere from 3.5% to 20%. And so it's really hard. There's not a way for us to translate the consideration or vendor lien information into market data that we could use for our appraisals. We did send out sales questionnaires to property owners in Travis County. We sent out over 21,000 sales letters. We got just over 2,000 back, but there are real concerns about the credibility and the quality of the data that we got back. Some of the responses that we've shared publicly have been responses such as, I paid $6 in a sexual favor. We've had other responses where they've reported in their sales letter one value, but they testified at a hearing before the ARB just last year at a different sales price. And we've had other situations where the data was provided to us, that the property was listed at one price. It has a vendor's lien for another amount, and then they submitted a sales letter that indicated that the value was even half of what their vendor lien was. So we have no way of verifying the credibility of the data that we've been getting in from our sales questionnaires. We have seen feeds on Reddit and Nextdoor where property owners are being advised to not turn in the information to the appraisal district, or if you turn it into the appraisal district, either be inaccurate in what you turn in, or only turn it in if it indicates that the value is less than what they currently have you appraised for. So the sales questionnaire has been very, again, extremely limited in the data that we've been able to get back.
As a realtor, I can say that many, many escrow officers tell people at closing, if you get something from the county asking what you paid for the house, don't send it in.
Yeah.
So I hear you.
Yeah, so we've had very, very limited success in those efforts. We did have last year, we did try to go to a third-party vendor to get the data from a third-party vendor, but there were issues related to that. We have reached out to title companies, but what I get back when I reach out to title companies is we depend on the real estate agents and brokers to bring us business. Providing data to you is bad for our business. So we've been shut down there. We have talked to developers that are developing areas, asked them to provide us information. A lot of times the ESDs and the MUDs come to us for estimates, and they give us a developer's report of how many new homes they've added to it. We say, you know, here's the data that we've got, but if you could please provide us with sales information, it would help me do a better estimate for you, and we've gotten no response from those efforts as well. We agree. We want to do an accurate job of doing appraisals. The Constitution requires us to appraise properties at market value, and the legislature has defined what market value is. It's the sale of what the property would sell for, and so in order to be able to do the job that we need to do, we need to have market data. We are going through all the steps that we need to in our reappraisal plan. We are, again, continuing to try to collect market data. We are doing our statistical analysis and our data verification. But as we went through the process and went through our initial phases, it became very apparent that we lacked sufficient data to recalibrate our models and determine any values other than the values that we had previously generated through our 2019 models when we had sufficient data.
Question that came from Superintendent Leonard. Does the comptroller have MLS data, and is that something that can be made available to us?
Yes, the data is available to the comptroller, and I got confirmation from the comptroller that they do have that data. We have asked if we could do an open records request and get that data from them, and the response we got from the comptroller is that data to them is confidential and cannot be released to us until they have completed their study. And they don't complete their study until after we've done our job. So I can't get that data even from the comptroller until after I was already supposed to do my job. So okay. so we are making an open plea to anybody, if they've got market data that they can share with the appraisal district, please step forward and provide it to us, because we want to do our jobs. We want to do an accurate job, but there just isn't data. So we are doing our reappraisals. We are doing everything on our reappraisal plan. It's just the results that we're able to come up based with the data that we have does not indicate any change to the values that we currently have in place.
So my understanding then is the comptroller has the MLS data. They will not give it to you. You're going to have to go through a process where you don't have the data.
Yes.
And then they're going to do a study that's going to judge you on the basis of the data they have, but you do not have. Is that correct?
Yes, and that was one of the reasons why we wanted to make sure we brought our school districts in, because it is a property value study year for them. There are questions about whether or not we will be able to pass the property value study and get valid findings from the comptroller. Even when you get invalid findings from the comptroller because you don't meet their margin of error, and their margin of error is 5%, there's opportunities for the school districts to be held harmless and be put in a place of grace. And so there's an opportunity that our school districts may be held harmless. We may get grace from the comptroller. However, there is also a risk that if we are too far outside of the margin of error, that they will not get grace. And we know that the Austin market is very rapidly appreciating, and we don't have the ability to reflect that in our study, so there is an opportunity. We hope it's slim, but we don't know, so we wanted to make sure that we made them aware of it as soon as possible, that we may not be able to keep grace status. But again, we are looking for all opportunities to get the data. I throw myself on the mercy of the public to try to provide me market data.
Can I ask you a question that I know the answer to, but just for the benefit of public record? We all know the Austin market is going up. Can't you just, say all values from last year go up 4%?
The burden of proof at a property tax protest is on the appraisal district, and so if I were to increase values and not be able to support or defend those, then they would get reduced at the ARB. I would also fail my property value study. I would fail my MAP study for increasing values without having the support necessary. And I just would not do it, because it's not accurate. I need to base it on data, and I need to have the data to do the job that I need to do.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have a question. What is San Antonio doing in other major districts? What are they doing?
There are a lot of other major appraisal districts that get the data from their...
So ABOR is the only MLS system that will not
I will not say that it's the only one that will not provide it to the appraisal district. They have been... Our situation is unique in the state. We haven't had one that has been quite so public to expose the flaws in the system at large. They are able to get it from other third-party sources. They may have a third-party contract that they get it from. They may be able to get it from title companies or other sources. We just have not. There is a difference in Austin.
Can Mike give you any information as to what's happening in Bexar County? Is he still there?
Mike Amoskita, yes, he's still there. I know that they do not have access to their local board, and they are getting it from some other third party sources.
Can we get a third party source like they?
We have attempted to get third party sources, and we've had a contract with one last year to get our data, and there were some legal challenges to that. We've reached out to other third party sources to try to get more data, and we're not able to get third party sources to agree to provide.
Can
data
he
to
help
the
us help get that other source?
I am throwing myself on the mercy of anybody that can help me. I'm looking for the data, and asking anybody that can help us, asking the public at large to give us some assistance with getting the data, asking the public just to be honest to us when you fill out your sales questionnaire. But it is a struggle for the appraisal district.
On new construction, on new neighborhoods, you can go in there and get all the prices for all the homes. It's going to be the base price. So you're going to know it's going to be It's an average of $30,000 more for upgrades.
Yeah,
for
and we're still going through all of the processes in our reappraisal plan. We're still picking up new construction. We'll be adding that to the appraisal roll. We're looking at remodels and updating property characteristics, and all those other activities are still ongoing. It's just when it comes to the data analysis to determine if I can calibrate my models to calculate a different appraised value, the data just does not exist to recalibrate our appraisal models just across the board.
My concern is with the properties that don't have exemptions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have an exemption, you can only go up 10% a year. So if you don't appraise this year, the following year they can go up 20%?
For those properties that don't have the benefit of the protection for the homestead exemption, their value would be reflective of whatever market value is.
That's really going to hurt a lot of people.
Yes. Yeah, we understand. Again, our goal is to do our job. We want to do our job. We want to have the data in order to be able to do our job. It's just not there. It is not being provided to the appraisal district for us to be able to do that job.
I have a question. I don't know. Is this on? Yeah, sounds like it's on. So if you did go ahead with the limited and questionable data that you have, is there a risk for the school districts and other entities and the taxpayers that we could even be worse off because it's not consistent and it's not complete?
With the data that I have, I can't generate an accurate appraisal model. I can't generate an equitable model.
So if you tried, there's no guarantee that the school districts would be better off or worse off or anybody else.
No. In fact, you know, with the limited data that I do have, because the limited data I get tends to be the properties that are telling me that the values are correct or reporting what we already have, it's not really indicating any change in the market value. So even if I did it on the limited 2,000 sales that I do have, it's not indicating a change in the market value. It's just because the data that I am getting is the data on the low side that already supports the values that we already have in place.
I just can't understand why anybody would oppose appraisal districts having the information that they need to do their job. Your job is you have to figure out fair market value, and the best indicator of fair market value is what homes are selling for, what property is selling for. You're not allowed to have it, and today we're hearing the comptroller has it, and they're going to grade you on it, but they're going to grade you on it without your having access to that information. In my mind, that's outrageous.
And it's an issue with the system at large. We are just one of the major metros that has first encountered the difficulties that we are encountering. But again, we are continuing to work to see if there are ways that we can continue to try to acquire data. If not for this year, for next year, we are reaching out to. And again, I'm making a very open and public plea. If you've got data, if you can agree to provide us information, please step forward. We need it in order to be able to do our job. I have to have it come from some other source. It's not available to me. I can't create it. I need to get it from other sources. And again, we're making a very, very public plea. Assist us, if not for this year, help us for next year.
You shouldn't have to beg and plead to get the information that you need to do your job. That's just outrageous. And I am so sympathetic with all our taxing entities and our taxpayers. This is a horrible situation we're in. I think a lot of the firepower, the frustration that people have ought to be aimed at the state and the comptroller's office. And we spend $1.5 million data mining trying to find information that we shouldn't have to spend because that data ought to be readily available.
And even our efforts are again, I can't find people willing to take my money to provide me the data.
Most states allow their appraisal districts to have access to this information. Is that correct?
We are one of 12 states that does not have sales disclosure.
This is obviously a system issue, and I couldn't agree more with Bruce and what he's just said. This, I assume, is a rising trend across the state for CADs?
Yes.
Mario, could you explain why you think legally you can pause for this year on 2020 and not reappraise?
We are going through all the steps necessary by law. We're required to appraise at least once every 3 years, reappraise all property. We've reappraised in every year leading up to this. And you know, technically, we are actually, in our terms, reappraising. It's just that the data is not telling us that there's any change in value. So based on the data that I have, the data is telling me that there's not any change of value. I've got to base my appraisals off of data, and my data is there that is telling me that there's no difference between last year and this year. So it would be the same, you know, if the market was going down, I would have to appraise values, appraise them, and it might indicate that there's a reduction. Nothing in our reappraisal plan says that there's absolutely going to be an increase in values or a decrease in values. We just have to do the data analysis to make sure that the values that we have are reflective of market value. And based on the data that I have, we're reflective of market value, but I'm recognizing that I don't have all of the data that there is. In fact, I don't have what I feel is a sufficient amount of data to generate credibly new appraisals on the data. The remedy when you have a limited sample set is to expand your time frame. I expand my time frame. I'm extending my time frame to look back and incorporating that 2019 data, which, again, just leads me back to the same results that I already have.
Thank you. Can you speak to the other valuation processes? We've spoken about sales, but can we speak to why the other two mechanisms of valuation are not able to be generated?
So there are three approaches to value, and there are a sales approach, and most commonly used for residential property, and that's appraisals based on sales of similar properties. There is a cost approach, which is an approach based on what would it cost to construct the property, less depreciation, and then there's an income approach that is based on what would the value of the property would be, what would it sell for based on the income that it generates. That's typically utilized for commercial properties. We have market data for commercial properties. We feel that we can continue to run our income models and reappraise commercial properties. We do look at a cost approach. The issue that we have with a cost approach is that while I may be able to get a cost on the improvement, the bricks and sticks, there is no cost table that tells me what the value of the land is. You have to have sales data to determine that value of the land. And so without the sales data, I can't determine the land value to do a credible cost approach. We always, our model is a hybrid. We do a hybrid of a sales-adjusted cost model. But we are adjusting our land values based on sales and then applying market adjustments based on sales that we have. So even those models are out to us. And again, the legislature has defined for me what our goal is and how we're to appraise properties. If the legislature were to redefine and say that we value properties on a cost basis without underlying land, then we would certainly do that as the legislature dictates. But under the laws of the state that I have to operate under now, I don't have sufficient data to recalibrate any of our existing models. And even when I look at recalibrating them based on the data that I do have, it leads me back to the same results that I've got, which means our values aren't changing. To lay people, that means we're not reappraising because our values aren't changing. For us, we are going through all the process that we need to, all the data analysis that we need to do. It's just the conclusions that we're coming to don't indicate a change in values for residential properties. Any other? So, again, I am making a plea for anybody that is willing to step forward and meet with us and try to help us with solutions moving forward, to help us provide data. We are open to it. Again, I'm begging for it because I need it. It's necessary for me to be able to do my job, and we really want to be able to do our job as accurately as possible.
Well, again, you know, I couldn't agree more with what Bruce Elfant said earlier, and I believe you have the full confidence of this board in you know, what you're trying to do in a very, very difficult situation. So thank you.
Appreciate it. Next up is just to give you an update on our 2020 informal meeting process and some of the plans that we've got that we put in place with the board. So we adopted a policy for our meeting place. We had talked about some of the innovations that we were going to try to put in place. I just wanted to give you an update on where we're at with some of those innovations. We are looking at a system, it's called QList, that would allow property owners to schedule themselves for their meetings. Again, our informal process is strictly on a walk-in basis, but they can schedule themselves. We will not be scheduling them, but they can schedule themselves for time to come into the appraisal district. So we're working on a system to do that. Not only can they schedule themselves in advance, but they can also get in line the day of and hold their place in line. We'll have our wait times online. It'll send them text messages to let them know when they're getting close, to let them know that they need to start working their way to the appraisal district offices. So we're really pleased with the efforts that we've made with the QList system. We think it'll be a great service for property owners. We're looking at taking the events off-site and going into the community centers at least one day a week in various places in the county. So we have gotten confirmation for community centers in Jonestown, in Oak Hill, Pflugerville, Del Valley. We did reach out to the Dove Springs and the South Post locations, but they don't have community rooms that would be available, so we couldn't use those. And there is a conflict on the calendar for Manor to use their community system, so we're still working and seeing if there's availability for us to do that. But we have confirmed the other four locations that we would have use of their centers on Fridays. There are a couple that will have to share the space with Meals on Wheels during lunchtime, but we think that we can make that work. So we will be going out into the communities for property owners to make it a little bit more convenient for them to come to our site and or go to sites closer to their properties. We're also working on the ability for property owners to, once an offer is made, be able to accept that by phone. And so we've got a request later in the presentation for budget expenses related to creating an ability for property owners to call in, just like you would a credit card, get your offer and accept it by the phone. So that is where we're at in our informal meeting process. It's some of the technology that we're implementing to make it as easy as possible for property owners.
To the point of one of our speakers, will the tax agents have a different process, or will they sign up using the system or show up and wait in line like a typical homeowner?
The goal was to have one system that applied to everybody so that it would be fair and everybody was being treated equally and the same. So this one system will be available to everybody that wants to come.
And will there be a separate meeting for tax agents to learn this information?
We can, if it's the wish of the board, we can hold one. But again, it's the same process for everybody. It'll be the same.
Is this on the website or will it be on the website?
It will be on the website, yes.
Could you respond to the same gentleman who was asking what the informals would look like going forward? He suggested that it might not be what we've all understood it to be in the past. So could you respond to his question about what they'll look like and what people can expect in terms of getting a response?
So what the board asked us to do was to create a policy where property owners would have an opportunity to come in, meet with an appraiser, provide their evidence, provide their information, ask questions, get information from the staff, and that we would then take that information, it would be reviewed, an offer would be made to the property owner, and they could accept or reject that offer or go on to a formal hearing. We've incorporated as many ways as possible to make that offer as convenient as property owners. So we are going to, again, we have our existing portal. We're adding methods to do it by phone. We're adding methods to do it by email. And we're adding methods to do it so that they can receive it by letter. It's the choice of the property owner as to how they will receive their offer. And we would have the offer out to them approximately 1 week after we meet with them.
But the only real change in that process, as I understand it, is that the offer won't be immediate.
Yes.
But the process will be the same. It'll be a process where evidence is shared.
Yes.
And deliberated, and then at some point after that, the offers would be made.
Correct.
Yes, it's. I appreciate your leadership during this time. I know there are a lot of changes that need to be made, and you're working to hit those standards that were required by state law, and I really appreciate the leadership. Bruce, just a comment on one of those changes. One of the reasons why that decision-making was separate is because now it's equal. with people who submit online. They're getting the exact same decision-making process. It also allows for a double review of those valuations and not just a singular review. We still have the same sort of communications strategy at the front end that people had asked for through the informal process and information gathering.
At the last meeting, we were asked to give an update on the Lake Austin properties and the issues with the Lake Austin properties. So this is an issue that we inherited. It happened back, I believe, in 1986. From the appraisal district's perspective, in our data, the properties were never coded for the city of Austin. So we were not reflecting these as being part of an ordinance or not part of an ordinance. From our perspective, they were never part of the city of Austin and were never coded to be taxable by the city of Austin. A couple years ago, somebody from the city came to me and they said, we need to get a conservative estimate for the council. They're considering changing whether or not these properties would be taxable by the city of Austin. Can you help us get a conservative estimate? We told them at that point in time, we don't have any data. I don't have those flagged as being ordinance properties or not. Can you help me? Give me some parameters in which to derive this list that you're asking for your estimate. And so with coordination of city staff members, we got parameters. We provided a list that would provide the estimate that they wanted for council members. It's come to light that the ordinance covered perhaps more parcels than the parameters that we used. We have staff currently going on a parcel-by-parcel basis, reviewing each and every parcel that potentially should be within the city of Austin boundaries, but was never coded to be within the city of Austin boundaries. If the city boundary line cuts through the middle of the parcel, we're having to calculate a percentage of what percentage is in the city, what percentage is out, and we have to do that for both the land and the improvement. So it's taking a little bit of time for us to do that parcel-by-parcel review and the calculations based on where the city jurisdiction line lies. We anticipate that we will have this done end of February, first week of March, and have a comprehensive list of all parcels correctly reflective based on city boundaries. But again, we never track these based on being ordinanced or non-ordinanced. For us, it's just a matter of making sure that our records accurately reflect where the city boundaries are based on our understanding of where the city boundaries currently exist. And so we're making those corrections on that. The city often referred to that as an exemption, but that's inaccurate. City did not have an authority to create an exemption. What they had the authority to do is determine whether or not the properties were going to be taxable within their boundaries or not. Technically, I think that probably should have been done as a de-annexation order, but it was done so long ago that that's not how it actually occurred in the city record and in the appraisal district records. So we are making sure that our records accurately reflect where the city boundaries lie. If there are any disputes over whether or not it should or should not be taxable by the city, it's a dispute between the property owners and the city. The appraisal district is strictly reflecting where the legal boundaries lie at this point in time. Taxpayer outreach programs, we've done quite a few. We've got many more scheduled. We're reaching out to all the neighborhood associations to try to get an opportunity or an invitation to go out and speak before them. We just did a big town hall with Senator Watson that was strictly over exemptions. We got pretty good turnout on that one. So we're really pleased we were able to inform property owners of some changes in the laws, particularly related to exemptions that may benefit them. And we will have many more scheduled. We're trying to get as many scheduled in the months of March and April as possible. So if anybody would like to request it, we've got information on our website of where you can go to make a request to have us come out and do a town hall for your organization. I've also included a copy of our 2019 annual report. It's just metrics on our stats for the year 2019 and our workload and what we've accomplished in 2019. We've also included a copy of our 2019 maps review. Comptroller comes through and studies the appraisal district biennially for methods and practices. So we get a test by the comptroller every year. In odd number of years, we get a test on our appraisal practices and methods, and in even years, we get a test on our property value studies. So 2019 was a methods and assistance. We meet all. We had one recommendation. At the time, they do a random sampling and ask for copies of applications, and when they made their random sampling, we could not locate one agricultural application. So there was a recommendation in the MAPS review that we incorporate processes to ensure that we have all of our applications. We were able to find it later, but at the time that they made the request, we were missing that one ag application. So we've implemented additional processes for all of our agricultural properties, and we extended that to ensure that we've got applications on our homesteaded properties as well. So there was only one recommendation on our MAPS review. Otherwise, we met all of the requirements of the comptroller in the annual MAPS or the biannual MAPS review. And then just an update on the renovation status of our new building on East Anderson Lane. We were able to get our final permit from the City of Austin, so the work is moving forward. We are still on target to have that complete and ready to go for the ARB come June 1st of this coming year. If there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions from the board.
On the renovations, does the district use historically underutilized businesses, do you try to get those?
Yes, that's something that our general contractor does. And Leanna can explain a little more.
So we used a construction manager at risk contract, and they used the state of of Texas requirements for hubs. So we over exceeded even the state mandate for
we
hubs.
Did. Mm-hmm.
The next item on the agenda is 5B, discussion and possible action on purchase of phone system enhancements in support of the 2020 informal meeting preparation.
So this is a new system. I'll let Leanne explain a little bit more about what we're trying to do, but it is related to the informal process and having property owners be able to call in and get their offer and be able to accept over the phone.
And this proposal is provided by our current phone system provider, so we wouldn't have to purchase a new system. They are a state purchasing contract. The total cost for the entire project, both licensing and the implementation, is $95,808. So we are requesting that you approve that. In order to get it done in a time frame that it'll be usable, we need to move very quickly. So,
yeah. And we have the money in our reserves for technology and enhancements to cover the purchase, which would be the next agenda item.
What if this is recurring? So the following year, how much would we be looking at?
There's an annual maintenance associated with it. It would probably be a couple $1,000s.
So that would be the third line item here, the 3207?
Yes.
Okay.
And this is needed because you're using a different conference, informal conferences?
This will give the property owners the ability to call in like you would if you were authorizing a credit card and activating it. So they'll call in. They can provide their property ID. Any offer on their property would then be given to them, and they could accept or reject through the phone.
Okay.
So it's just providing an additional convenience to property owners to accept their offers.
Yeah, we just did not discuss this when we were discussing this.
It was one of the recommendations that we had.
This $94,000 program, how much capacity does it allow you to handle?
I would have to pull the actual statement of work, but it accounts for, I believe, 100 calls every hour, concurrent calls an hour.
And is the system automatic? So it doesn't require someone, a staff person,
no,
to answer
the
phone?
No, it's automatic.
So, I mean, I'm guessing there's probably some offset labor expense.
If we do hit capacity of that 100 concurrent calls, would it roll over to the general line, and so that the call would still be fielded, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
I move approval.
Second.
Item's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Next item on the agenda is 5C, discussion and possible action on allocation of funds from reserves for technology enhancements for phone system enhancements.
And this is just a transfer from our reserve to cover the cost of the telephone system that was just approved.
I move we transfer the funds from the reserve for technology enhancements as described in item 5C.
I second that.
Item has been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes unanimously. On to item 5D, discussion and possible action on litigation and appeals related to pending lawsuits and anticipated lawsuits.
And we will need executive session for that.
Okay. So at this time, we will, where is it? We will suspend the meeting at 12:20 and go into executive session, citing section 551.001 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, including consultation with attorney regarding pending and contemplated litigation, settlements, offers, and matters on which the attorney has a duty to advise the board under the Texas disciplinary rules and professional conduct of the State Board of Texas. Back to order. We are now here to discuss agenda item 5E, discussion and possible action to add items to future agendas. Does anyone have any items they would like to see appear on the next regularly scheduled meeting, and when would the board be available to meet next?
James, I'd like to see the board can meet next Thursday at 1 o'clock. And the issues to be considered, all these issues revolving around the discussion that's been had today from the public.
Okay. Is anyone else available to meet next Thursday at 1 o'clock?
You're open tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm sorry, next week.
No, 27th.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Buckle, to be clear, for the next meeting, are you wanting a discussion and action on potential litigation and appeals, or an open discussion?
Potential litigation and alternatives to litigation.
I think I'd like to move that the board authorize Maria to make another open records request to the comptroller for the data that we believe they have.
Okay.
That would allow her to do her job.
Okay. All those in favor of that?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. And we can get a report on that on the 27th as well. If there is any update, just that it's been filed. Yeah.
James, the last thing is I'd like to have legal counsel prepare a response to the letter we received today from the various school districts.
Okay.
And have that paper first next Thursday.
Okay. So if that could be drafted and we'll review that at the meeting on the 27th, that would be great. Does anyone else have any other items they'd like to see? It's been moved and seconded. At 1:25, the Travis Central Appraisal District Board of Directors stands adjourned.